The War of 8:12 p.m.
We are present here, observers at that war. And now it is 1 o'clock a.m., but contrary to our usual practice, the Ask Dr. Hal Show live on radio will continue for the next hour in this special extended episode entitled A Visit from K-Rob.
Yeah. The Mole Cola Hour.
Yes, with the unexpected benefit or benison of a bottle of Mole Cola. Deliciously extracted from those burrowing underground creatures with star-shaped noses.
It's a bad, 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 bad cola.
And served in a curvaceous bottle, which is an attractive object in and of itself.
Yeah. Like a buxom lady.
Well, no doubt that's certainly part of its appeal.
Lady.
Better than the Venus of Willendorf. No, I'm just kidding. More like the Aunt Jemima bottle that used to be in stores.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one? It was shaped like her.
Well, there was a bottle of alcohol that I saw recently that had a kind of a feminine shape. And I thought, like, oh, look, it's Mrs. Butterworth when she was kind of young and vigorous, you know. I mean, she's like an old mom, you know, now. But, like, back in the day, she was kind of a...
We have an all-points bulletin out for a Mrs. Butterworth last scene. Hey, that's her, isn't it, Sarge? That Buttercrunch dame, whatever. Pull over.
Oh, my.
Not in our America.
Or, you know, the Frangelico priest, you know, when he was a little kid.
Fra Angelica?
That's supposed to be like a kind of a monk or a, not a, well, like a...
Like a brother, a friar.
A friar, yeah, that's it. Friar Tuck. Friar Tuck's Friday.
Friar Tucker Carlson. Look at them tucking into that dinner.
Now let's do a commercial for
8 Hearty and
military grade flashlights.
Sure, they'll never quit on you. These colors never run, and these batteries take a long time before they run out.
Now it's time to maximize your testosterone level
with this waterproof U.S. military surplus, baby. With replaceable detachable lenses. And MagnaVision.
You ever see the Leonard Nimoy MagnaVision ads?
No, I didn't know they existed. I don't know where I got that. I don't know. Nope.
That was when laser discs were coming out.
Laser discs.
And it was the first home entertainment video product that had stereo capabilities. So, like...
Stereo.
It was kind of awesome, you know, to have a left and right.
Awesome, dude.
You could play, you know, and then MTV came out and they said, hook this up to your stereo so you can get it in, you know, 2.1 sound, etc. I'm just hurting every man. Because they were, you know, VJs, video jocks, back announcing their... video presentations, like they were playing, you know, hot vinyl tracks, you know, and whatnot on an FM band station.
Interesting how puzzling evidence the other night was mentioning the stream running underneath the radio station.
Oh, like Black Blood of the Earth and Big Trouble in Little China.
Well,
what is that? Oil? No, Black Blood of the Earth.
Oh, no.
You remember that, yeah?
Yes, of
okay,
course.
Yeah, okay, I'm not crazy, yeah.
No, really, that's a good recollection on your part.
They go underneath San Francisco, and there's a river, you know.
Well, in this area, this was called Happy Valley. It was the most fertile spot of earth in the nation. And now it's completely paved over and is the Mission District.
Yeah.
But the stream still runs underground, under Mission Street.
What did they call it in Vertigo? They called it Hobo Town or
Skid Row.
Skid Row, exactly.
The Mission, but that's Skid Row.
Yeah. Mission and Market Street drunks. That's what I want my show to be filled with.
Drug dealers and market missions?
Yeah, just,
no.
You know, you do a show, you want a crowd, you know, but if you can get a crowd full of drunks.
Yeah, that's the wrong kind of crowd there.
Sometimes the host is drunk.
The main theme for 20 Million Miles to Earth is actually music which was already owned by Warner Brothers and came from other movies. And the actual...
The Nash and Bainey music?
The actual... it wasn't Nash and Bainey.
Oh, I thought you were 1 million.
20 Million Miles to Earth.
Okay, I was thinking 1 million years BC.
But... I lost my train of thought there, but...
I just heard the word million.
The actual...
That was the only word
the
I got,
actual
right.
Name of the cut of of music is Pa Reprimands Rudolph.
Really?
From an earlier movie. And the reason Pa reprimands Rudolph is that Rudolph is drunk in this earlier movie.
Okay.
And this is used for the rocket crash, but... Okay. In a sense, according to one writer I read, he says it's like the rocket is drunk, and they're using the music in that way. The rocket has a hole in it. It's crashing, you know. Something is is wrong. It's
is
out
it
of
like
control.
Weaving and being kind of like how a drunk would walk down the
well,
street?
Well, you know, Colonel Calder does his best to bring in the rocket, being the only living person. His assistant is dying. Everybody else is a goner. And so he does all right. He crashes in the Mediterranean.
It's like the Sully Sullenberger of NASA. Now I want a movie made about me.
How does it feel to be the first man in space? Well, fine, sir, except that, yes, I know your men. Well, they certainly have their glory, but you did it, I am. On Venus, we discovered...
Your Men! What was that movie?
Which movie?
It's like a... It's like a son yelling at his dad, and... It's like, oh yeah, Your Men. Like, you're always there for Your Men. When have you ever been there for me?
All the money in the world can't buy me happiness, Dad.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Your Men! Like Tom Cruise, maybe? I don't know.
Hmm.
How is it that you're always there for them, but you're never there for me, Dad?
Yeah, Daddy-o.
Give that kid a Twinkie.
Well, you can sure hear it concatenating in from next door, King. An inseparable part of the sound here.
Yeah.
But it is, after all, the sound of distant revelry.
Hey, that disco is really bothering the baby.
Yes, I know. Well, it's a disco generation kid. Obedisco, as they say. And so it goes. At 1:10 a.m. on the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio, with special guest K-Rob. Well, next door, the makeout room throbs to an amplified beat. Well, that was one delicious bottle of Mole Cola. It was there when I needed it. At 138 calendars.
My
calories.
My style can't be duplicated or recycled.
I am a traveler. A wanderer.
I'm not a disc jockey. I'm a human radio station.
Dante's yes. Hot Tub with your host, Juan Rapido.
What a bummer!
On Radio Valencia, Wednesday, 8 to 10.
Countdown, take me away!
Thank you very much. You've been a delightful audience.
Yeah. Juan Rapido, what?
It's the equal time, Doctor.
No, it's Charlie Sheen. He's yelling at his dad in Wall Street. That's what that's from. I thought it was Tom Cruise, but it was Charlie Sheen.
Is he yelling at G. Gordon Gekko?
He's yelling at his dad because his dad isn't being duped by the Trumpy Gekko, and he's... And Charlie Sheen, his kid, wants to, you know, be... He's like the Don Jr., maybe, but...
Come on, Pop, get with the program.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you make money and be chintzy and evil like me or whatever? But he's like a Sith apprentice or something, you know? He's trying to get his dad in on the game, and his dad isn't having it, so he goes like, I gotta be there for my men, you know, my union representatives, etc. So when I heard your men, I thought Army, and I was thinking like, is that a cruise?
A master of the universe.
A few good men, whatever, but yeah. Yeah, it's Wall Street. Oliver Stone's Wall Street.
I vaguely remember it.
Yeah. A dad and a kid playing a dad and his kid. Now that's what I call acting. I don't know. I don't like the fact that there's this father and son, but they're actually portraying a father and son. I don't know if that's a... It's a little weird, you know.
But how about Kurt Russell and his son playing both playing Kurt Russell?
The Monarch thing.
That's kind of fun.
Because the movie or the show has flashbacks and it goes back to his younger...
Oh, yes. All that jumping around in time.
Have Kirk Douglas and Michael Douglas ever... played off each other cinematically?
I'm wondering if they ever did. They should have. yes. If music be the food of love, play on. What's going on now? Some sort of dyspepsia, it sounds like. Supposedly, according to the head of the station, there's supposed to be a T-shirt here for me, but I was never able to find it. Maybe it never got there somehow. Possibly. But in the fullness of time, that too shall be remedied. That problem addressed and vanquished. For now is the hour of penultimate power before the awakening day. Now is the turn of the mind to adjourn. Run tape and let radio play.
Well, I think I'm going to get a drink before they last call it over there.
All right.
That'll probably... Well, they're going to be
1:15 a.m.
Oh, they're going to go all the way.
All the way?
All the way to 2 a.m.
Oh, no doubt. And so will I. And even then, come back earlier than I usually do. Yes, time's heavy hand lies upon us. Jesus, the mad days we have seen. Yes, let's keep our chins up and our spirits up, eh?
If you love America, then you know what I mean.
Honk if you love the USA. You honky.
A man everybody would like to have seen dead.
Dr. Fiasco.
An audacious man of action, capable of a tender, hopeless love, which could only last a day, but a day which was worth all eternity.
Wednesdays, from 10 p.m. to midnight.
It's gonna be like nothing anybody has ever seen.
Is that Juan Rapido again?
No, it was Dr. Fiasco, whom you remember.
Fiasco. Yeah, yeah.
He and I did some recording together. And everything was going fine.
Bop, 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 bop.
Ah, yes, Offenbach. The can-can, of course.
Look at those. What do they call them? The leg line or the.
The can-can.
Like that, when there's a line of like rockets or whatever. What do they call them?
Yes, kicking. Nikita Khrushchev thought it was immoral when he visited and saw the movie. Simply a historical recreation. Those scenes occur in many movies, including Westerns, which is rather hard to believe, considering what the West was actually like. But anyway, that's Hollywood. Make it constantly entertaining to watch. And Offenbach, who wrote this cool music that is associated with it, I wouldn't kid you. That's what they tell you.
You got the camera, right? You can borrow it again.
You still haven't told us what we're doing here, man.
I did tell you. Research.
I thought there was a sanity clause in this agreement. Now, Ricky, you got mad.
Buildings, rooms, misremembering themselves.
They call him Femus, the Man Mountain, with one horrible bloodshot eye staring down. Son of Neptune. Brother of Zeus, that is Neptune, not Femus. Aetes, the king of Colchis, was not a human, nor one of the Olympian gods. He was one of the previous gods, a titan who had lived as a human for so long that he thought of himself as human. His daughter Medea was also of this divine blood. And she, of course, was a famous sorceress who could do all sorts of things with her magic.
Fleece to own.
And then when they broke up, it was extremely bad because you don't want a powerful sorceress mad at you when you break up. But Jason did manage to escape from Colchis with her and the famous golden fleece. It was the fleece of a magical ram that could fly, on which Phrixus and Hela escaped their tormentors owing to the divine intercession of the Olympian gods. As they passed over the body of water, Hela fell from the back of the ram into the water and was drowned. From then on, it was known as the Hellespont, or Hela's water. Phrixus landed the ram in Colchis, where it was dedicated to the gods at the temple there of Hecate, I believe, the three-headed goddess that all witches worship. Yes, those vicious witches worship Hecate, the goddess of witches. She's cool. She's got three heads. What's not to like? In the film, Jason and the Argonauts, Nancy Kovac, as the High Priestess of Hecate, does a dance, a sort of a sexy dance in the temple, which actually is accurate, historically speaking, though we're speaking of a legendary period. Still, the temple dancers could still officiate. In fact, it was considered to be part of the job. To be seized by the divine Aphlatus, inspired, and the representative of the Olympians with their incredible powers and awesome potential cruelty. So that was that. And then further on, Circe was one of these titans. She knew, or had actually had the opportunity to speak to Prometheus after his conviction by the other gods. And in fact, she wasn't even supposed to speak to him. He was anathema, but that's just one of the many things she did to break the mold. She commanded the physics and the molecules and so on, but not through magic, through potions and spells, through mixing natural ingredients, which was thought to be a terrible thing by the other gods. Miracles should always be performed just by willing it so, not by meddling with things and making it happen. But she lived on her island with her faithful pet lions and was the chatelaine, the mistress of the whole place, and if obstreperous men landed on the island and attempted to overpower her, since there was no man present or male staff in a corner or anything, she would transform them into pigs. And this is what happened to Odysseus's men when they stopped on the island. She turned them all into hogs and put them in the pen. But pretty soon Odysseus came along and, well, you'll just have to read the story. Now K-Rob has disappeared. He knows that he can't get a drink before last call unless he makes his move at this particular time. But I fear there will be some difficulty if he attempts to move out of the saloon carrying any vessel filled with an alcoholic potation. Whether it be a paper cup, a telltale can, or a glittering bottle, it is more of a violation than a solecism. But that's neither here nor there. It doesn't have anything to do with the price of pudding. The susurrus, the noise from the crowd, has grown incredibly, increasingly louder and roars outside the doors of RadioValencia.fm. What a rumbustious group they are, hooting and shouting, loudly laughing. And perhaps they wish to satisfy their hunger and will get some porcupine pies from the local street vendor, the trash truck, as it were, that is drawn up, selling hot tacos and other epiphenomena of the colorful Mission District. In fact, there's a really good one near here, if he's still near here, where the food is of quite a good quality.
Who's the faster?
Dave's not here.
No, why?
That's about the same thing as I was saying. All these Germans like talk to people. I say, hey, what's up, or something like that. You say, "Who's the slowest?" And that means what's lost. And then they come back to you, "Der Hund ist los," meaning the dog got lost. And you're supposed to go, and point fingers at each other and then make these huge excretions. These, you know, like these F-P-H-A-R-T-Z that are so loud and menacing that they made schools close.
The German... Those Germans are a funny race.
Yeah.
They put their Fräuleins in outer space.
Yeah, yeah.
When they want to have sex, they pick a liver. And when they achieve their orgasm, they start to quiver. See, I made a poem.
That was well said, too. I have to concurred with Monsters on that one.
Actually, it's pretty bad. I think I pretty much kind of ruined the last line.
Well, it's a difficult last line. It's not if you're Slowmon or Pokemon or something like that.
You know, it could have been something shorter, like, and all the while his loins are quiver.
Yeah.
It's only funny because it's said in a silly, semi-German sounding accent.
That's, yeah, it's like Lolita, only without the hair lip.
Well, I mean, the movie's never as good as the comic book, you know. The movie's never as good as the video game. It's getting that way.
Well, I'm hearing a buzz now. That must be... How come I didn't hear a buzz when you called me back? I'm sorry.
I'm listening for the buzz.
I heard that if you do focus on the buzz in a form of meditation, you'll get three wishes from a genie in a bottle. I don't know if it's the same bottle we all drank from Canubially or...
Well, I mean, you'll probably get the bottle. The genie is not really guaranteed.
Do you think you could close off a city of, say, 21 million people, a conglomerate of cities running into each other, of coming to about 20 million people, and just, you know, say no viruses will be allowed to go in there?
I have no idea what you're talking about, although it calls to mind the predicament of the people in Wuhan, China, who are all dying of a huge infectious... Contrero virus, isn't that what it's called?
Yeah,
no walruses? Oh, no viruses, sorry.
Well, some people call it a cerveza virus because you drink it daily, like you drink soporific milk if you were an underage child.
Wow, some kind of buzz just came in sounding like a tidal wave, Dave.
Yeah, it's very loud right now.
A buzz? Are you saying a buzz came in? A buzz in Foyle Castle? Better a fart in Buckingham Palace. Oh, well, just thinking back. So, I had said, or had I, that I would speak of the poet Omar, Khayyam. As we know, he was born at Naishapur in Khorasan in the latter half of our 11th century. And he died within the first quarter of the 12th century. But he was acquainted with Nizam al-Mulk, who was vizier to Alp Arslan, the son, and Malik Shah, the grandson, of Togrul Beg, the Tartar, who had conquered Persia and had easily overturned the feeble successor of Mahmud the Great, and he founded the Seljukian dynasty, which was prominently in control during the life of the poet. And that was the group that roused Europe into the Crusades, as it were. So this Nizam ul-Mulk wrote in his wasiat, or testament, which he wrote and left as a memorial for future statesmen, One of the greatest of the wise men of Khorasan was the Imam Muwaffaq of Naishapur, a man highly honored and reverenced. May God rejoice his soul. His illustrious years exceeded 85, and it was the universal belief that every boy who read the Quran or studied the traditions in his presence would assuredly attain to honor and happiness. For this cause did my father send me from Tus to Naishapur with Abdus Samad, the doctor of law, that I might employ myself in study and learning under the guidance of that illustrious teacher. Towards me he ever turned an eye of favor and kindness, and as his pupil I felt for him extreme affection and devotion, so that I passed 4 years in his service. When I first came there, I found 2 other pupils of mine own age, newly arrived, Hakim Omar Khayyam and the ill-fated Ben Sabah. Both were endowed with sharpness of wit and the highest natural powers, and we three formed a close friendship together. When the Imam rose from his lectures, they used to join me, and we repeated to each other the lessons we had heard. Now, Omar was a native of Naishapur, while Hassan bin Sabah's father was one Ali, a man of austere life and practice, but heretical in his creed and doctrine. One day, Hassan said to me and to Khayyam, "It is a universal belief that the pupils of the Imam Muwaffaq will attain to fortune. Now, even if we all do not attain thereto, without doubt one of us will, what then shall be our mutual pledge and bond?" We answered, "Be it what you please." "Well," he said, "let us make a vow that to whomever this fortune falls, he shall share it equally with the rest and reserve no preeminence for himself." "Be it so," we both replied. And on these terms, we mutually pledged our words. Years rolled on, and I went from Khorasan to Transoxiana and wandered to Ghazni and Kabul. And when I returned, I was invested with office and rose to be administrator of affairs during the sultanate of Sultan Al-Arslan. He goes on to state that years passed by, and both his old school friends found him out and came and claimed a share in his good fortune, according to the school day vow. The vizier was generous and kept his word. Hassan demanded a place in the government, which the sultan granted at the vizier's request. But discontented with a gradual rise, he plunged into the maze of intrigue of an oriental court, and failing in a base attempt to supplant his benefactor, he was disgraced and fell. After many mishaps and wanderings, Hassan became the head of the Persian sect of the Ismailians, a party of fanatics who had long murmured in obscurity but rose to an evil eminence under the guidance of his strong and evil will. In A.D. 1090, he seized the castle of Alamut in the province of Rudbar, which lies in the mountainous tract south of the Caspian Sea. And it was from this mountain, from this home, he obtained that evil celebrity among the Crusaders as the Old Man of the Mountain, and spread terror through the Mohammedan world. And it is yet disputed whether the word assassin, which they left in the language of modern Europe at their dark memorial, is derived from the hashish, or opiate of hemp leaves, the Indian bhang, with which they maddened themselves in the sullen pitch of oriental desperation, or from the name of the founder of the dynasty, whom we have seen in his quiet collegiate days at Naishapur. One of the countless victims of the assassin's dagger was Nizam ul-Mulk himself, the old schoolboy friend. Some of Omar's rubaiyat warn us of the danger of greatness, the instability of fortune, And while advocating charity to all men, recommending us to be too intimate with none, Attar makes Nizam-ul-Mulk use the very words of his friend Omar. When Nizam-ul-Mulk was in the agony of death, he said, "O God, I am passing away in the hand of the wind." Omar Khayyam came also to the vizier to claim his share, but not to ask for title or office. "The greatest boon you can confer on me," he said, "is to let me live in a corner under the shadow of your greatness, to spread wide the advantages of science and pray for your long life and prosperity." The vizier tells us that when he found Omar was really sincere in his refusal, he pressed him no further but granted him a yearly pension of 1,200 mithkals of gold from the treasury of Naishapur. At Naishapur, thus lived and died Omar Khayyam. "Busied," adds the vizier, "in winning knowledge of every kind, and especially in astronomy, where he attained to a very high preeminence. Under the sultanate of Malik Shah, he came to Merv and attained great praise for his proficiency in science, and the sultan showered favors upon him. When Malik Shah determined to reform the calendar, Omar was one of the 8 learned men employed to do it. The result was the Jaldi era, so called from Jalal ud-Din, one of the king's names, a computation of time, according to Gibbon, author of Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, which surpasses the Julian and approaches the accuracy of the Gregorian style. Now, Omar says, "Ah, but my computations, people say, reduced the year to better reckoning? Nay, 'twas only, 'twas only, what, taking from the calendar, unborn tomorrow and dead yesterday." Omar is also the author of some astronomical tables. These are known as the Ziji Malik Shahi, and the French have lately republished and translated an Arabic treatise of his on algebra, which he also wrote. His Takhalus, which means his poetical name, Khayyam, signifies a tent maker, Omar the tent maker, and he is said to have at one time perhaps exercised that trade, perhaps before Nizam-ul-Mulk's generosity raised him to independence. Many Persian poets similarly derive their names from their occupations. Thus we have Attar, a druggist, Asar, an oil presser, and so forth. Omar himself alludes to his name in Khayyam, who stitched the tents of science, has fallen in grief's furnace and been suddenly burned. The shears of fate have cut the tent ropes of his life, and the broker of hope has sold him for nothing. We have only one more anecdote to give of his life, and that relates to the clothes. It is told that in the anonymous preface, which is sometimes prefixed to his poems, it has been printed in the Persian in the appendix to Hyde's Veterum Persarum Religio, page 499, and Berlow alludes it in his Bibliotheque under Khayyam. It is written in the Chronicles of the Ancients that this king of the wise, Omar Khayyam, died at Naishapur in the year of the Hegira 517, which to the West would be AD 1123. In science he was unrivaled, the very paragon of his age. Khwaja Nizami of Samarkand, who was one of his pupils, relates the following story. "I often used to hold conversations with my teacher, Omar Khayyam, in a garden, and one day he said to me, "My tomb shall be in a spot where the north wind may scatter roses over it." I wondered at the words he spoke, but I knew that his words were no idle words. Years after, when I chanced to visit Naishapur, I went to his final resting place. And lo, it was just outside a garden, and trees laden with fruit stretched their boughs over the garden wall and dropped their flowers upon his tomb. So that the stone was hidden under them. Yes, I'm through. That's the end of the Mon Cola. I was using the cap as an ashtray. Pardon the pig Latin. Yeah. Maybe I can empty it into the bag since it's all just ashes to ashes. And we could have a valedictory one for the road there, if you would like it. Just listen to the joyous sound of celebration. Yes. They be having fun, but I don't want them to look in and see me.
Yeah, you ever see the movie Bee Girl?
Bee Girl?
Yeah, it was early 60s British movie. Christopher Lee, I think, played a pimp.
Wow, that sounds good. Or early Hammer?
Or maybe a crime lord, I don't know. But he was in it. And there was a bunch of, you know, young beat kids in Britain. And there was a girl who was in it, and she was one of the sympathetic. She was kind of like the Don Wells of the group. And she had a song. Her name was Shirley Ann Field.
Right.
And her song was called "It's Legal," meaning our love. But in this case, it's legal. You know, it's like our fatty is legal.
It's hard to believe. And yet, it is still not tolerated by the management.
No, but they're not the management. Who are they going to talk to?
The managerial class.
Juan Rapido? Dr. Fiasco?
Can't they review the voluminous footage on the snooper?
The snooper reel, yeah. Posted daily on RadioValencia.fm.
Well, just because they can't do it now doesn't mean they might.
Well, yeah, exactly.
If they got gadget mad, maybe they could have a robot identify all signs of this, that, and the other, and prepare the footage.
Yeah.
Yes, master.
Or at least make an AI version of whatever it is that you want to look at.
Yeah, hell, why bother with the
Clint
footage?
Eastwood was a Ghostbuster? What?
Forget the footage. Just make up the incriminating stuff with the AI. Then you don't have to go through
exactly,
anything.
Exactly, yeah.
But...
That wasn't me. Well, looks like you. I mean, I don't look either that close, you know.
I'd never call you a liar.
20 million years, or 20 million miles B.C.
to the beach.
One million miles to Earth.
Turf.
A planet called...
Earth. Well, I believe that's how Planet of the Vampires ends, isn't it?
Oh, the Baba movie?
Yes. Don't they end up heading toward this new planet, you know, which they've been talking about.
Oh, I forgot how it ended. It
turns out to be our world all along.
Okay.
We're descended from them, maybe, huh?
Yeah. And they have a, who was the, like, military ape in Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes?
Well, I don't recall the motion capture guy.
He wasn't motion captured.
Oh, he wasn't?
He had a mask. And
oh, is that a pantomime ape, huh? Mm-hmm.
It was
Charlie DeMar.
It was
DeMar.
The Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie.
Yes, I there have been so many that I've been, you know, they kind of blur together. I haven't seen them recently.
Well, it was like late 90s, I guess.
Which one has the apes on the Golden Gate Bridge?
That was the one with, I forget who directed that one. But it was, I remember that lineage. They had about four movies. They had four apes films.
Four or five.
Yeah. They had the kind of like a prequel.
They had Planet of the Apes. They had
War of the Planet of the Apes.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
I'm talking about the one you're talking about.
Oh, I was...
Like that new generation.
Oh, okay.
But Beneath comes from the original five movies.
Well, yes, the second one. And that's one where they destroy the entire Earth, which makes it difficult
to
have a sequel. So the next one was, you know, they managed to
James
get...
James Franco was the hero in the first one, right?
Cornelius and Zira got to Earth... And managed to have little baby Caesar.
Before
they themselves were destroyed, Caesar roused up the other apes into the first ape rebellion against humans. Well, this is my understanding.
I like ape rebellion. I just want to hear that a lot.
Right. Well, which one were they on the Golden Gate Bridge? Oh, well.
That was the second... of the new Planet of the Apes films. The one that started in like 2000 and, you know, like 5 or something. I forget when it was started, but James Franco was like the hero in that.
And Franco-Americans.
And then there was like this, like you could see the arc of the Caesar ape being like, wow, you're really smart, and you can do stuff, and that, oh, but wait, humans are, like, being disintegrated by this, like, new gene protocol or whatever it was that was spreading the, apes are getting smart, humans are dying.
Right.
But the Golden Gate Bridge one was, I think, the sequel to the first one in that, and then, and what was, here's the thing that's nutty. They have like, you know, like apes all over San Francisco, right?
Right, and apes on, everywhere.
Like they're on cable cars and they're on the bridge and
cable cars.
Yeah, they're on a cable car. Yeah, Caesar is like leading the, and they're in the city hall.
There's an ape in the power station running the cable cars.
No. They're on like they're going up California Street or something.
But what about the grip man? He's. I mean, it's going to let a bunch of insane gorillas on the...
Hey, you got to pay if you're going to be on this thing.
Yeah, it's up to $10, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It should, I think, be just as much... If you have a you know, whatchamacallit card, you should be able to hop on the damn thing. That's what I think. But, of course, the city...
Well, people line up for it like it's a
yes,
like it's a ride or something, you know. I mean, it is a ride, but it's
also you can't just jump on it in motion anymore. Or jump off it, and
that's what I mean. Like that was the original, like way. This is the way of the cable car. Oh, here we go, caretaker. Yeah.
Yes, let's take care not to be in the way of a falling, rampaging cable car. Loosed from its moorings, hurtling downstairs, down the street to the screams of tourists.
You turned me on to the caretaker, by the way.
Oh, you like the caretaker?
Yeah, no, I ended up like buying a bunch of that stuff. Mm. and I was like, where caretaker? And I, so I found it on, I think, Bandcamp maybe, or whatever, but I probably bought about 10 hours of music.
Well, I don't know his story.
No, I don't either, but it's like I like the whole vibe of it.
The milieu.
Yeah. Stiller and ephemera.
Confusing.
That should be our comedy team name.
And what a comedy. What a comedy.
Yeah. Who was... it was... No, Nichols and May. Whatever happened to Elaine May? How far did she go?
Well, she had a great career as a comedy writer.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Nichols, of course, got filmic and legendary through his graduation and whatnot. And for, did he direct Gattaca or something? Like, I forget what... He kept making movies for, like, a really long time, right?
I believe so.
Mike Nichols, yeah. I'm just thinking,
He was a prominent screenwriter as well as a director in Hollywood at the time of the 60s, you know, when things
were... No, I just mean, like, way
changing.
Later, like, he kept making movies.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any names in mind of movies?
Well, I was... For some reason, I thought Gattaca... But, like, I was thinking, like, what's the most recent film he directed? Because he kept making movies. And I was thinking, like, Elaine May never kept making movies. Like those paths were divergent, obviously. They went down different roads, you know. Hall went one way,
but they
Oates
left
went the other.
They left a good record of stuff behind them and inspiration.
Art Garfunkel never married Edie Brickell, you know, like that never happened.
Yes, well, there many
we're living in this timeline.
The story that gets smoothed over for propaganda value and.
Do you have a lighter? Sorry.
Why? Of course. I think so. I thought so. And I do.
It's not the Boris Karloff that carries you off.
Usually.
But the Bella, they Lugosi you off in.
How about Abbott and Costello meet the killer Boris Karloff?
No way. That's a movie?
Yes, it's a movie.
It's Meet the Killer, Boris Karloff.
Yes.
Okay. Not Jerry Lee Lewis.
I went to Winston Smith's studio, and he had a bunch of old lobby cards, and I acquired one. However, it wasn't that one. However, it does show, like, Abbott and Costello, and then Karloff is in a turban, you know, just putting the whammy on.
The whammy on Sammy Davis, Jr.,
nor on, you know, Lou Sartori. Costello and Bud Abbott.
What if Abbott and Costello met Nancy Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr.
on an RC Cola sponsored special?
Exactly.
But
oh, you know what? I'm actually getting the soundtrack to Moving with Nancy on a vinyl record through boutique vinyl distributors.
The vinyl frontier.
Yeah. But like I've never heard that on any like playable medium like
not
vinyl
even
or CD.
VHS.
Well, VHS and streaming, of course. But I mean like just audio specific.
The Earth Dies Streaming. Well,
okay,
this time, the Ask Dr. Hal show says 23 Skidoo and Flaming Youth, excuse our dust. We got to make tracks. Feets get moving. And so
we've
appreciated those who have followed us through this extra hour of